CBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CB Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mark Remillard. The mother of Breonna Taylor, Tamika Palmer, says she's been calling out the conduct of the Louisville Police Department since her daughter was killed in a botched raid.
This thing shouldn't have never happened, and that it took 3 years for anybody else to say that it shouldn't have.
This comes as the Justice Department released a report today finding Louisville police engaged in a pattern of unlawful and discriminatory conduct, depriving people of their constitutional liberties. The San Bernardino Sheriff's Department telling ABC News three people have been found dead in wellness checks requested following a record winter storm. State Department spokesman Ned Price says officials are still trying to recover the bodies of two Americans kidnapped and killed in Mexico.
Our embassy in Mexico City, our consulate in Matamoros, have been working to support the families, to support their wishes, and working hand in glove with Mexican authorities and our U.S. government counterparts as well.
Two others who were kidnapped are now back in the U.S. This is ABC News. Fans of the Academy Awards red carpet might be disappointed this year.
A big change for the Oscars this year. The red carpet won't be red. Host Jimmy Kimmel was part of unveiling this year's champagne carpet and couldn't help but throw in a joke about last year's Will Smith, Chris Rock smack.
I think that this decision to go with a champagne carpet rather than a red carpet shows how confident we are that no blood will be shed.
Kimmel hosting the Oscars for a third time, and you'll see it Sunday night on ABC. Jason Nathanson, ABC News, Hollywood.
A series of earthquakes at a remote Alaska volcano have intensified in the past few weeks, indicating an eruption could be possible. The Tananga volcano is on an uninhabited island in the western Aleutians. There are no communities or structures there, but Adak is about 60 miles away and could see ashfall. As a way to celebrate International Women's Day, an all-female crew of more than 70 will be producing tonight's Mavericks Pelican game on ESPN. Disney is the parent company of ABC News and ESPN. Mark Remillard, ABC News.
Local radio for your community. Civic Media, broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin.
Hey, Fox Valley, if you've got a favorite supper club, we're your station. Civic Media.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The city of Madison plans to take car makers Kia and Hyundai to federal court for making their vehicles too easy to steal. Those makes have been targets of widespread thefts in recent months. The mayor says Madison drivers deserve better. Governor Evers tells WisPolitics.com there will be an increase in shared state revenue to local governments in the next budget. Evers says the biggest increase in shared revenue in the last 15 years was only 0.04%.
Not 40, but 0.04%. That's crazy. How can you operate a municipality? I don't care if you're 300 people township or city of Milwaukee.
Particulars on spending increases are still unclear. Republicans are busy reworking the two-year spending plan. In sports, the Bucks beat Orlando last night. The Badgers take on Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
It's a whole new game with the Civic Media Network and our local stations carrying coverage of Marquette men's basketball in the Big East Conference Tournament. Play gets underway this Thursday when the number one seeded Golden Eagles tip off at 11 a.m. against the winner of the St. John's University Butler matchup. Catch all the action on WXCO 1230 a.m., 98.9 FM in Wausau. In the Nakusa area, dial up WIRI 105.5 FM. Every step of the Big East Tournament. Find Marquette on these local Civic Media radio stations and on the Civic Media app.
At George Chambers Septic in Green Bay, we admire our area veterans. Whether they served in World Wars, Korea, or the Middle East, we know they deserve our compassion, especially those suffering from PTSD. Let's honor our vets by hiring them as they honored our country by serving it. At George Chambers Septic in Green Bay, we believe no veteran should struggle to make a decent living, and we honor all of those who have given the ultimate sacrifice in service to our nation. George Chambers Septic has been serving the community now for more than 35 years.
Go by any construction site in Wisconsin, you're gonna see a lot of Michael's trucks. Since 2014, they've had more than $1 billion worth of contracts with the state government.
A large part of those coming with Foxconn without any results in that area.
Do we want a governor who might be giving his brothers the contract? I think he needs to answer that before the election.
We'll just kick that one down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it, but of course, Michael's corporation would get to build that said bridge.
Listen Monday through Friday from 2 to 3, it's Dueling Tangents.
Hey, sis, missed you this morning. Kim told me you weren't feeling well, so I'm just doing a self-care check.
Oh, thank you, friend.
How you doing?
Girl, listen, my energy was so low because I didn't eat breakfast when I got up, so I had to miss virtual yoga with y'all.
Trust me, I understand.
But I'm doing much better now that I've eaten, so I'm back on track.
Great. In that case, let's get some steps in tonight. I'll come over and we can walk around the lake.
Sounds good. Appreciate you being in my business, too. Now, let me get in yours. Did you check your blood pressure today?
I did that and my squats, okay?
Okay.
High blood pressure is not going to be my friend if I can help it. See you at 6?
Let's get it. See you then.
Now more than ever, it's important that we protect our hearts and the hearts of those we love. Check in on one another and be a part of a healthy blood pressure movement. Rally your squad to take the online pledge at releasethepressure.org. Brought to you by the Release the Pressure Coalition and the Ad Council.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of a working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Big news today. Michigan. Yes. Yes, Michigan. Looking at you. They have moved to repeal their no rights at work legislation. It's out of the House, going to the Senate. Moving on a promise that they made to voters in Michigan in 2022 that they would repeal the horrible right-to-work law that Republicans rammed through like thieves in the night a little over a decade ago. And again, I look at when Republicans did this, like thieves in the night. It's my number one reason why I'm against term limits. Because half of the a good number of the people who voted for this horrible legislation back in 2012 were people who were term limited out and they were looking for a job. So it was the payoff. You vote for this no rights at work. You take this ability of workers to fight for better wages, hours, conditions away, and we'll give you a soft landing spot. All you got to do is vote for this lovely sounding piece of legislation. Because who could possibly be against someone's right to work? Who could be against that? And yet we know no rights, no work, and not only that, lower wages, less benefits, and less safe. As one of the proponents of the legislation pointed out, that since Michigan went this horrible direction, wages are down 13% and injuries at work are up 50%. Also, union membership has fallen from the fifth highest in the country down to 12th. And that was always the plan. That's the idea of these no rights at work schemes. It's to lower the number of people who have the ability to collectively bargain. Because what they like, again, it's about separating the sheep. It's about separating we, the working people, because it's easier to negotiate and get your will over one or two, but not the entire facility, which is why collective bargaining works and why it has to be broken. Now, I love the right to work folks' arguments. No, we're not anti-union. No, we wouldn't do that. We're for choice. And yet you see time and time again, because they understand where the power is. The power is in the moneyed interests. The power is in the, well, if you look at Pennsylvania's workers' compensation law, it still refers to the employer-employee relationship as a master-servant relationship. So understand where their thinking is. They know where the power is. They know where the money is. It's certainly not the workers. So this is a huge, huge, to steal a Joe Biden, this is a BFD. This is a big freaking deal. Finally, a Democratic, finally, Democrats going, we're going to do it. Virginia's still mad at you. But we'll see if it gets through the Senate, and I believe it will, and I believe the governor will sign it, and we will see one of these horrible, horrible pieces of legislation go down. And look, we need to do this across the country to give workers the ability to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, conditions. Now, the moneyed interest, they will not go, they're not going to go softly. They're not going to go quietly into that good night. In fact, billionaire Betsy DeVos, you may remember her, Trump's education secretary, and some of the other moneyed interests of Michigan, they're rattling the sabers a little bit, saying that they may petition for a drive to let the voters decide. Now, because they're playing on, voters didn't want to add collective bargaining rights to their constitution. It failed in that vote. So they're taking this going, see, they don't want it. I think now is the time, especially after the shutdown, especially after you see the massive disparity in wages between the billionaire Betsy's of the world and all the people who actually go out and do the work. It's going to be an interesting moment. And the reason I bring this up today, good news today, Bernie Sanders, chairman of the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, the HELP Committee. I love the fact that Bernie's the chair of this. And one of the great quotes that came out of Sanders today was, there is a class war going on whether we want to recognize it or not. And I tend to recognize it. Yeah, I can, you know, you go back to the quote attributed to Jay Gould, I could easily pay half the working class to murder the other half. And that was what kind of played out in this hearing today, as you had a couple of, you had the right to work guy there from on one side. You had the chamber guy, if I'm not mistaken. And then you had Mary Kay Henry from SEIU, Liz Schuler from the AFL-CIO, and Sean O'Brien from the Teamsters, which O'Brien got all of the headlines today because much of the attention was focused on him and the exchange between him and Oklahoma Senator Mark Wayne Mullen. And look, I want to get into that, but the most important quote that came out of it is O'Brien said, when an employer, be they rail carriers, package companies, or coffee shops, gets away with repeated abuse of American workers, the legislators who let it happen are complicit in these crimes. And I've been saying this for the longest time. Look, these companies have been getting away literally with committing crimes daily. And honestly, and I said this the other day, if I'm advising a company on how to break their union, it would be malpractice to not have them break the law. It would be malpractice to say, no, don't not fire someone. That's wrong. It's bad. No, the law is so weak, the teeth are so grinded down to nubs that it doesn't matter. The penalties are non-existent. And this is what O'Brien and the others were saying. Look, we need major comprehensive labor law reform. We need real teeth in organizing. Now, what I loved, oh boy, every Republican who stepped up there was, you know, we're not against unions. No. It's the same. Understand what the right line is. The Republican, the conservative, the right-leaning, the anti-worker line is always the same. Whether it's a guy in Michigan, whether it's their No Rights at Work guy, whether it's Mix, the national No Rights at Work guy, no matter, or a senator on the HELP committee, it's all the same. You know, we're not anti-union. No, we just believe in competition, and we want people to have choice. And yet, you see that the choice that they get is to be harassed, intimidated, browbeaten, sometimes fired. And you know, again, we've seen these high-profile cases, which are not new. This stuff's been going on for decades, but we're finally paying attention to it. And this hearing is a pretty big deal in that finally someone in our government is bringing it up. Is it going to go anywhere? I doubt it. But it's important to keep bringing this stuff up and important to keep talking about it in a way that workers see someone fighting for them. Look, the thing I loved most of all about this hearing was the fact that O'Brien was not going to back down from Mark Wayne Mullen. You know, Mullen was talking, you know, when they come after me, you know, I encourage, you know, physical this or that. I'm going to take them on because he thinks he's Billy, you know, bad, you know what. And O'Brien didn't back down, and good on him. It's about time working people have a little swagger. It's about time that working people man up and say, you know what, we're not going to back down. We're not going to take it on the chin anymore. We're going to stand up and fight. And I love the fact that O'Brien, while he didn't have any facts in front of him, he wasn't wrong. He pointed out that CEOs are getting away with, you know, millions of dollars, and they're hiding money. And he pointed it back at Mark Wayne Mullen, who is a really rich guy, and said, you know, well, how much do you make? Because Mullen tried to go after him for what he makes as the union president. Now, we can argue whether $195,000 a year for a union president is too much. I don't think so. But we can argue whether that's too much in this day and age, especially when you look at, you know, you got some UPS drivers who are making 100 and a half. Now, Mullen said, well, you got these feeder drivers who are making 35, which not even close to possible. If that's the case, you only worked a couple of months. But wanted to throw this out there to make it look like, well, you got these rich union bosses making 195 grand a year without looking in the mirror. Because here's a guy, according to Tulsa World, which is a news publication out in Oklahoma where Mark Wayne Mullen's from. They pointed out, looking at the financial disclosures that he put forth as a candidate, that his wealth in 2020 ranged from $7.3 million to $29.9 million at the end of 2020. For the last election in 2022, his wealth ranged in the $31.6 to $75.6 million range. Significantly more than the prior 2 years. Now you go, well, that's because, you know, everyone got a little bit wealthier. If you're in, you know, in the Senate, you obviously, you know, stuff. And why I bring this up is O'Brien said, well, how much do you make? And he said that he made $50,000 a year. And I'm going, you know, how do you build that kind of wealth on $50,000 a year? Now, he says he puts it back into his business because he wants us to believe that he lives like a pauper. I want to know. I now have to see the $50,000 in tax forms. I now have to see the claims that Mark Wayne Mullen made that his employees make more than union plumbers with better wages, better benefits, better conditions. I now have to see this because, look, if it's true, good on Mark Wayne Mullen. I haven't seen that often. There have been a few exceptions where that has rung true, but the general rule is union workers make better wages, hours, conditions. That's the general rule. Now, again, you look at some of this stuff. They talked about why does it always have to be so adversarial? And I've always said it doesn't have to be. Workers don't want it to be adversarial. They want to participate in the company that they work for. They want to put all of their energy, they want to put all of their passion into making that company successful. But it's got to come back to them. I say all the time, the company that I work for, I want them to be as profitable as possible. So that come negotiation time, we see better wages in our pockets too. I want that company to be successful for 100 years. So that I can retire and my kids, if they want to work there, can work there, and their kids, and so on. But this right-wing frame that unions want to put companies out of business, again, front and center in the adversarial discussions. And it doesn't have to be this way. There can be a symbiotic relationship where companies are going, yeah, we want the best labor. We want the best product we can get. And the workers are like, yeah, we want to work for a company that treats us well. That should be something that can be somewhat agreed on. But at the end of it, when you start talking about, you know, CEOs and executives and shareholders wanting more and more and more and this insatiable appetite for more, who gets squeezed? Well, the workers, because they're nothing but a negative on the balance sheet today. And it wasn't always that way. So the question is, how do you get back to a place where it's no longer that adversarial? And I say the more people in unions, the more people across the board who have access to union jobs, the better it's going to be. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Got lots to get to today. Lots on my mind. Back after this. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll grab ours. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, lots of email around Schmucker Carlson. Reality, you know, the headlines, you know, it's the end of Tucker Carlson. You know, you had the headline, Fox is effed, by former senior Obama advisor Dan Pfeiffer. And look, this has been the kind of the, from the left, and from the middle, this has been kind of the, look how bad it is for Fox News. Look, you know, look at these emails and look at all of this information that's coming out about, you know, how they view their viewers as dupes and morons, and how they knew the big lie was a big lie. But as Rupert Murdoch said, they didn't care. It was about the money. It's not about red or blue, right or wrong, black or white, up or down. It's about cash. It's about green. It's about putting it in their pocket. And one of the interesting, you know, back and forths that popped up, the exchange between Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, and Tucker Carlson, where Ingraham goes, you know, my anger is at the news channel. It's pronounced. Carlson says, it should be. We devote our lives to building an audience. And they let Chris Wallace and Leland effing fitter wreck it too much. Hannity says, too much is correct. I'm disgusted at this point. Ingraham, I think the three of us have enormous power. We have more power than we know or exercise together. And they together decided that they were going to, well, continue to lie, continue to push the big lie while Vittert and Wallace were saying, no, this isn't it. Now, Vittert and Wallace are all gone. They left and went somewhere else because they're actually journalists. I mean, I don't always agree with them, but, you know, they're actually journalists telling the story. And what's come up in the emails that I'm getting from people, and this is the weird thing is, you know, everything's now, you know, did you see Tucker Carlson's video? Did you see the video? They were walking between the ropes. And you knew this was going to happen. Because Republicans think strategically long term. They think message long term. They understand their base better than we understand anything else. And I was saying at the time when the January 6th committee was coming together and figuring out how they were going to go forward, and Kevin McCarthy said, you know, we're not participating. If you're not going to give us our attack dogs, and this was an excuse more than anything, because they didn't want anyone on that committee. They said, if you don't give us who we want, we can't put our criminals on there, then we're gonna back out. That was a strategic move. Everyone said, oh, it's stupid. You know, they should have done that. No, they knew what they were doing. They didn't want to have to defend January 6th. They didn't want to have to defend Donald Trump. They didn't want to have to defend the base who showed up and defecated on the floor. They didn't want to have to defend the guy urinating on the desk. They didn't want to have to defend the people stabbing policemen with flagpoles. They didn't want to have to do that. They wanted to be able to sanitize that and say, oh, that's just those liberals and those Democrats showing you this stuff. So they got the video, and Tucker Carlson boiled 40,000 hours of video down to a couple minutes, and they found people walking between the velvet ropes. They found people taking pictures. They found people, you know, skipping through the halls. They found people smelling butterflies. They found all kinds of wonderful images out of 40,000 hours of video. And now they're presenting their narrative, as will Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans, because this isn't about getting to the truth. This isn't about hashing out an argument and really getting down to reality. This is about narrative. This is about storytelling. This is about the green. Because now we see, you know, Kevin McCarthy, we're going to have our probe into January 6th and we'll show you. The difference is Democrats aren't going to be stupid enough to go, no, we're not going to participate. They're going to go in there and fight every day for what Republicans bring up. And this Tucker Carlson video is part of that. The stuff that he's been saying and the narrative that, no, these were good people. It was a picnic day. Understand, January 6th, these folks, they went to Washington, D.C. for one purpose. One purpose was to stop the certification of the presidential election. That was it. They went there with that sole intent. Said it over and over and over again. The crime was we're stopping it. And yeah, were there people doing, you know, park kind of things? Sure. But there were also criminals breaking stuff and doing things that landed them in jail, as it should. But what's interesting to me is the Republican base. And this is the part that I'm interested in, because the base is kind of like, they're kind of like baby birds. They want their information chewed up and you know, basically dropped into their mouths bit by bit so that they don't have to think about it. Because understand, Fox is a con, and those people are the mark. All the hate, no reward for working people, but what you are doing is you are making the rich richer. And I got this idea today. I was thinking about an old movie. The movie was called A Face in the Crowd. Andy Griffith was the star. He played a character, Lonesome Rhodes, who, you know, good old yokel local, you know, just a good old down to earth, good old boy from Arkansas. And, you know, a woman puts him on the radio and he gets, it's kind of a hit. People take to him and his star rises to eventually he gets on TV and he's got a huge TV audience. And, you know, all the working people are gathered around the TV, you know, at the bars and at home and at work and all these places to listen to this guy's message because they think he's one of them. And the end, because, you know, at the beginning he is. At the beginning, you know, he's like they are. But as he gets wealthier and more powerful, he turns. He turns on them. Like the Fox News has done. You know, and I went and I looked at the final scene, because at the end of this, you see the rise of Andy Griffith's character until the end where the woman is, you know, has lost faith in him. She believes in the mission. She believes in the ideology and what he's saying. He doesn't. So at the end, she leaves the microphone potted up so that people can hear what he really thinks. And as the credits are about to roll and they're smiling and waving, and he goes, you know, look at all those morons out there. I could easily take chicken fertilizer and sell it to them as caviar. I could make them eat dog food and they'd think it's steak. Sure, I got them. I got them like this. You know what the public's like, a cage full of guinea pigs. He said, good night, you stupid idiots, with a big smile on his face. Good night, you miserable slobs, smiling like grin ear to ear. There are a lot of trained seals out there, he said. I toss them a dead fish and they flip their flippers. And then they turn to the crowds. And the crowds are like, oh, he's a monster. He's horrible. He turned to the workers. Oh, he's terrible. and they turn away from it, and he's gone. He's done. He's over. We are not that society. We are not that group of people, because what's coming out should be his Lonesome Roads moment. Should be the moment.
The Shaw 101 F.
From Oshkosh to Green Bay and points north, wherever you are in the Fox Valley, count on us to keep you connected, informed, and entertained. Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Mark Remillard. The mother of Breonna Taylor, Tamika Palmer, says she's been calling out the conduct of the Louisville Police Department since her daughter was killed in a botched raid.
This thing should have never happened, and that it took 3 years for anybody else to say that it shouldn't have.
This comes as the Justice Department released a report today finding Louisville police engaged in a pattern of unlawful and discriminatory conduct, depriving people of their constitutional liberties. The San Bernardino Sheriff's Department telling ABC News three people have been found dead in wellness checks requested following a record winter storm. State Department spokesman Ned Price says officials are still trying to recover the bodies of two Americans kidnapped and killed in Mexico.
Our embassy in Mexico City, our consulate in Matamoros, have been working to support the families, to support their wishes, and working hand in glove with Mexican authorities and our U.S. government counterparts as well.
Two others who were kidnapped are now back in the U.S. This is ABC News.
If Friday nights mean fish fries, we're your station. Civic Media for the Fox River Valley.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. New vaccination rules for Wisconsin schools and daycare centers covering shots for meningitis and chickenpox are likely going away. After a hearing yesterday, the co-chairman of the legislature's Joint Committee on Administrative Rules says those rules will be struck down soon. Governor Evers says he hopes the Wisconsin Supreme Court will take up the state's political map so it can come up with something more fair. New maps won't put Democrats in the majority, but he says he's okay with that.
If the makeup of the legislature is relatively close, it forces people to the middle. It forces people to compromise. And that's a good thing.
The winner of the race between Dan Kelly and Janet Protasiewicz will tip the ideological balance of the high court. The election is April 4th. In sports, the Bucks beat Orlando last night. The Badgers take on Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media station or on the app.
Suddenly, my quarterback is the number one trending topic. Why, you might ask, is Aaron Rodgers trending on Twitter? He's out this game. He's got COVID-19. And to my perception, he freaking lied to us, man. I'm very frustrated that he is not eligible to play this Sunday, especially when you find out your quarterback is a half a Trumpster. And he claims, I'm not a flat earther. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I just play one in the NFL. That pisses me off, man. I was going to bet on that team. Maybe.
New time, 3 to 6 p.m. And Dom.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a while, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a while, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the war on the 20th century commences as the governor of Arkansas has signed into law you know, who needs to verify how old that kid is working in that meat processing plant? You know, we don't really need to know how old they are. You know, we need to get those kids back to work. They're too lazy, you know, playing video games when they should be back in the mines. You know, back, you know, sweeping the bathrooms at school. Get rid of those union janitors. Remember when Newt Gingrich said that? The goal has always been, and again, this is the Inflation Reduction Act for Republicans. We're going to put kids to work so parents can afford to live. Wow, brilliant. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the attacks on children, both from the work standpoint and education front. I've asked Jessica Akers to come talk with us. Jessica is the president of the Arkansas AFL-CIO. Jessica, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Rick.
So Sarah Sanders has decided, you know what? We need cheap labor. We need easy, accessible labor. Let's get those kids back in the workforce.
You know, unfortunately, that's what it's looking like. You know, it's the typical kind of national Republican message of red tape, getting rid of red tape and deregulating everything, making it easier to exploit workers, for sure.
Now, what has she done here? I mean, I look at Iowa. Iowa's got a horrible bill. And again, you look across this country, there are a bunch of laws going after child labor laws, which I got to tell you, you know, I never thought would happen. You know, as a parent, I can't imagine going, yeah, we should have kids working on the kill floor of the meat processing plant. Well, absolutely. And we should give them, you know, give the employers liability shields as long as they can have the cover of the schools. I can't fathom that parents are thrilled with this. So, nuts and bolts, what has Sarah Huckabee Sanders signed? What's this going to mean for kids in Arkansas?
So what she signed it today, I do believe. What it did was it removed this work permit that we had in place in Arkansas. Some, as I was doing some research before talking to you, some states have work permits via school, right? It was through the DOL, a work permit for kids under 16. To work, but it required a parent to sign. It required age verification, and it required the work hour to be disclosed. And the argument was that it was, you know, burdensome on the parents, or burdensome on the state. I don't really exactly know who they were saying was burdensome on.
It was just burdensome. We know it was burdensome. We don't know who it was burdensome on, but we know.
Right. So we're going to take it away. And you know, the message behind that was, you know, putting the choice back into parents' hands, similar to the school choice arguments we see. And, you know, really just opening a door that could very much be a slippery slope. I saw that bill in Iowa. You know, we have Tyson here in Arkansas. We have lots of meat packing plants, and we're actually in, you know, a couple of our plants had some of those miners from the janitorial service, I guess, from up in Wisconsin, just the week this bill ran in the House.
Yeah. No, there's no, and of course they didn't care. But this is the thing here is that I've been saying is these child labor law changes aren't going to affect my kids, because, you know, clearly my kids are I'm going to advocate for them. I'm going to fight for them, and they don't have to work. I don't need my children to go out into the workforce so we can keep a roof over our family's head. And I'm fortunate in that way. And a lot of us are. The majority of us are. I know this kind of legislation is going to harm the least of us. Me, when I was a kid, when I was 8 or 9 years old, growing up in a housing project, those are the kids that are going to be harmed by this. And that's the point. The point of the cruelty seems to be the point in Republican policy, and this is it. We're going to continue to kick the down, the downtrodden, the poor, and abuse them and exploit them. And this is another way that they're going to continue to do that. That's my thought. I'm curious yours.
I think you're right on. And I think that a lot of the bills we see coming out of states like Arkansas, these folks really seem to be legislating from a point of privilege, right? It wouldn't be you or I that's going to get exploited, probably, or, your children or my children that would be exploited. It would be those in probably worse situations, worse economic situations, socioeconomic situations. And that seems to be what I find kind of a pattern, whether it be we're talking about schools or the workforce or unemployment. The pattern has really been, kind of my predominantly white middle class family, this isn't a problem for us, so it won't be a problem for anyone else.
No, you're exactly right. But here's the thing that gets me is, I remember Tom DeLay. I'm sure you remember the former Speaker of the House, Tom DeLay, a Republican from Texas, who famously said, if we could get rid of Roe and, we had those 40 million babies, we wouldn't need people from Mexico to come do our cheap labor. And this seems to me that in a time when, they've gotten Roe overturned, there's going to be a lot of children coming around, especially poor children. This seems like their cheap labor bill. As we're bringing jobs back from overseas, especially talking about bringing them back from China, this seems like we're going to be importing a lot of poverty labor jobs. And who better to do it with such small hands to do intricate work than the children of poor people? And this is... this is me looking down the road and angrily so and saying this is wrong and we should be stopping this instead of letting this stuff go by.
Right. I, of course, completely agree with you.
I like that.
One of the things, one of our concerns we've been discussing is that along with this bill, the conglomeration of them all, if you look at the big picture and down the road, we've got a lot of different bills that really are gearing up high schools to train little worker bees and be ready to go into that workforce and go work just directly after high school. Not against it, but they're going more and more to, I'm going to train you and then send you to go work and give me the next group that are going to be working. I had a conversation the other day. Why aren't we also, we're telling these kids, here's how to do an interview, here's how to write a resume, but we don't ever cover, here are your rights in a workplace. Let me make sure that, if we're going to educate you and encourage you to, go into the workplace, why don't we make sure and do you a solid that you're not taken advantage of because you know you're right?
No, you're spot on right. But again, you brought up education, and I look at what's going on, another coordinated effort, because I look at this attack on child labor as a coordinated effort across the country, because you look at, Ohio, Tennessee, Iowa, Arkansas, all of these places that are Wisconsin that are proposing legislation to weaken child labor laws, which again I thought we had decided decades ago. Also, the assault on public education. Your state, again, another state in a long line of states attacking public education for this idea that we're gonna have these, I guess tax credits or vouchers or charter schools or, all of these privatization schemes that are meant to take money from the public schools that desperately need it and dish it out to wealthy people who already send their kids to private school, creating more poor working class folks. It just seems like a perfect storm of horrible. And your state right there in front of it, Sarah Huckabee came out with, we're going to pay teachers more, but we're going to screw things up. Tell me about the education bill that they've proposed and where we are in the process with that.
I believe it was signed today.
I must have missed that one.
I think it was signed this afternoon, so it will probably really hit the news tomorrow. But I saw Education Committee take a little break today for a bill signing. I'm assuming that's what it was for. Right. So one thing that the governor did, Sarah Sanders, is she, one of her first cabinet appointees was Jacob Olivia out of Florida. So if you look at what we're kind of aligned with, I see a lot of policy coming out of Florida into this administration because she brought their education person.
Yeah.
So you're seeing the privatization. They being not a whole lot of what I would say teacher and public input. But the governor and her entering administration have been working on this, they said, for 6 months. And they presented an omnibus bill. An omnibus bill, there are some good things in there, right? That upping the pay is a good thing. But in order to get that up in pay, you're going to have to vote with along with all of these policy changes. And there were days and days and days of testimony and committee on this bill. And I commend, every teacher and superintendent that got involved and came to the Capitol to be heard. Unfortunately, it fell on some ears that it was already a done deal.
So I look at this, Jessica, and the sad reality is the moment we're in is, and I keep saying this, there's a move to repeal the 20th century, education being a huge part of this, labor rights for children, unemployment insurance, still on the national level, attacks on Social Security and Medicare, and all down the line, and I fear where this leads us, and this is where a strong labor movement is so very important. And today, Senator Sanders convened a committee here in the HELP committee, brought some labor leaders in to talk about organizing. And, your state is a no-rights state, a so-called right-to-work state where workers have a much more difficult time to organize and employers have so much power. Can you talk a little bit about some of the abuses? Because I've had some people go, well, no, the employers have their rights to view they don't abuse people. I say that these abuses have run rampant. They've gotten too far out of hand. And at some point, we've got to rein the kind of exploitation that we see in the workplace in. And it starts at the legislative level. So I'm curious, the conditions in Arkansas.
Regarding unemployment or...
The right to organize. I mean, the idea that people join and form unions in a right-to-work state, which Arkansas is a right-to-work state, right?
Correct. We, along with Florida, unfortunately, were the first to enact it. Unfortunately, Rick, it's going to come down to really educating and informing our workforce and our students and our population, our citizens of Arkansas. The South, unlike so many of my partners and in Pennsylvania, so to say, like where you are, or New York. Down here, your neighbor is not necessarily a union member. A lot of people don't know that unions exist in Arkansas because for so long, unions have really spread and our strength and our power has spread by word of mouth. And my uncle or my dad or my dad's brother, I come from a family of union members. Like, you just don't see that very often down here. So so many people don't really understand the basics of your rights in a workplace. It's not something businesses tout down here.
Right. Now, the reason I bring it up, Jessica, is that whether it's child labor laws, whether it's unemployment insurance, whether it's education, the labor movement has been front and center in fighting for all of those things. The progress of the 20th century has the labor movement's blood, sweat, and tears all over it. And to see it being destroyed systematically in state by state is angering, frustrating, and heartbreaking, all wrapped up into the same ball. My question is, how do we revive this? How do we get back to my grandparents' generation where working people understood the power and the need for organized labor and collective bargaining rights and community more than anything?
Right. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of a silver lining type of person. I try to look for the good in everything. And
that's what I'm looking for.
Let me tell you. So I think that we are really in an important moment. I think COVID, and especially in places in the South or places that didn't know worker power like some other, people really began to see, my health insurance is tied to my job. If I don't have job, I don't have health insurance. Oh, you can just let me go. You know, there were so many things that were brought to light during the pandemic that I think as we come back and it's a perfect disastrous storm. And one of the reasons we see these child labor bills is we've got, record retirement out of the pandemic. We knew that we were having an aging workforce, and then the pandemic kind of gave it a swift kick forward, right? So we were having even more of a labor shortage in some industries. And here's our time to I feel shine. That pendulum is less on the business side of things and swinging toward the workers. I think it's up to us as workers and as labor leaders and for people like you who get the good word out to really take this moment and use it and move the labor movement forward in real way.
It's all about feeling the power of making lives better. And, I'm a living testament to the power of the union card that I carry in my wallet, having grown up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. And I have led a life that I could have never imagined as a kid. And it's all because I believe, a huge part of it, that union card that I want for other people. I'm not one of those people, I've gotten to a certain point and I'm going to kick the ladder over. I want everyone to have opportunity to make their lives better. And for me, that's the way we do it, and also the way we bring the country back together.
Oh, absolutely. And you mentioned right to work earlier, and I mentioned silver linings. We've got to, and coming off the pandemic, if we can take this and show that with a union card, you also get a collective bargaining agreement in a state like Arkansas. if you don't have a contract, if you don't have a union and a collective bargaining agreement, you don't have a binding contract in this state.
Or in any state.
Right.
Yeah, every state's an at-will state unless you've got a collective bargaining agreement. And for me, that's one of the – sign me up. But Jessica, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. I hope you'll come back and share some more with us. I'm sure the attacks are going to be coming fast and furious with Sarah Huckabee there as the governor. So we'd love to have you come back and keep us informed on what's going on.
Absolutely, I will, anytime. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Jessica Aker. She's the president of the AFL-CIO there in Arkansas. ArkansasAFL-CIO.org, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1924. That was the day that tragedy struck at the Utah Fuel Company mine in Castle Gate, Utah. The mine stood about 90 miles southeast of Salt Lake City. Coal mining began at Castle Gate in 1888. On the fateful day of the explosion, at 8 in the morning, two violent blasts ripped through the number 2 mine. 20 minutes later, a third explosion went off. According to an investigation by the Bureau of Mines, the explosions inside the mine were extremely violent and reached all parts of the mine. 171 miners were killed instantly. Those who died reflected the diversity of those who worked in the mines. There were 49 Greeks, 22 Italians, 8 Japanese, 7 English, 6 Australian, 2 Scotch, 1 Belgian, and 76 Americans, including 2 African Americans. They left behind a combined total of 241 children and 25 pregnant wives. Rescue efforts were impeded by the poisonous gases and fire raging in the mine. Rescuers donned helmets to attempt to reach those below. One rescue leader, George Wilson, died from the carbon monoxide when his nose piece separated from his helmet. It's believed the explosion occurred when one of the bosses attempted to relight the flame on his headlamp. At the time, he was investigating a pocket of built-up gas in the mine. The flame ignited the gas and built up coal dust. The previous shift had kicked up the dust, and it had not been adequately watered down. This contributed to the explosions. It took 9 days to recover all of the bodies of those who died. The families of those killed were provided about $64 a month by the company and the state of Utah for several years after the tragedy. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This ought to make the right wing crazy. President Biden's approval rating has ticked up a bit. He's up to 42%, the highest level since June. Inflation is easing. Uh-oh, that narrative. things are bad in right-leaning world. And you want to talk about crazy? Kevin McCarthy handed the gavel over to Marjorie Trainwreck Greene to make her the speaker pro tempore. Now, I had everybody going, oh, does this mean she's in line to be president? I'm like, no. No, that's not how that works. Please don't get all freaked out. Evidently, she's just there for the day. But it's kind of scary that she would hold the gavel, even to look at it. Also, again, you know, with Republicans controlling Congress, some fun things are going to happen. Jamie Raskin, the Democrat on the House Oversight Committee, put forth a resolution, simple resolution, denouncing white supremacy. Because he claims that, look, a lot of the rhetoric that you're hearing coming out of the, you know, the members in Congress are a lot of the extreme MAGA stuff, a lot of the white supremacist rhetoric that you get, you know, about the southern border and, you know, replacement theory and all of this stuff. And they said, look, you know, just want you to admit, you know, you're not a white supremacist. Simple. It was very simple. It said, we, members of the Committee on Oversight and Accountability, together denounce white nationalism and white supremacy in all its forms, including the Great Replacement conspiracy theory. These hateful and dangerous ideologies have no place in the work of the United States Congress or committee. Who could be against that? Well, evidently everyone on the Republican side, because none of the 26 members of the House Republican Oversight Committee signed onto it. Not one. Now, interestingly enough, since we're talking about the House Oversight Committee, evidently some of the members of the House Oversight Committee will be visiting the January 6th criminals in jail. And what I love about this is, you know, a lot of those people, I'm sure, I guarantee it, while they're now crying and whining and complaining about how hard it is to be in jail, you know, they don't let me. You know, they were people who were saying, you know, jail's too easy on those people. They get to watch color cable TV, swimming pools, and lift weights all day. They're now seeing that jail isn't all it was cracked up to be, or so they thought. Now, here's some scary stuff. You got Congress not signing on to a resolution saying that they're against white supremacy. You've got them, you know, going, hey, we're going to go visit some white supremacist and crazy people. And a group thought done, this group, the Boogaloo Boys, a white supremacist group, I find interesting, spelled B-O-I-S, which I always thought was part of the LGBTQ community name thing. Interesting. But thought dead, thought it was over, thought they were done, thought they were sued out of existence. Evidently, there's a resurgence, and they're planning a comeback right around the time that, I guess, Trump and the Republicans start pushing for 2024. So that ought to be fun. And finally, this hour, the word woke, because Republicans are throwing that around as anything bad. And look, I'm not the mayor of Wokistan, not against it. But evidently, a USA Today poll says that the...
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.